to U.S. versus Feliciano.
It pleases the court. Again, my name is Robert Ruth, and I represent, in this case, Josue Feliciano.
Is this going to be longer than your last?
A little bit longer. The government has conceded that the trial court was wrong on the issue of whether the former sentence is a jail sentence. Okay? If you remember, the district court said you were not entitled to counsel in that Florida case because you did not receive a jail sentence in that Florida case. What he received was...
Well, what if the sentence had been strictly probation, but he already served 2 days of pretrial or in confinement?
Well, there were options. The one option would be to credit that sentence to a fine, credit that sentence to court costs. I know what we do in Wisconsin routinely is the 2 days jail is credited to the judgment. You're not sentenced to jail. It's put on your judgment. If you're probation...
Okay, I'm not sure that may be the way that Wisconsin does it, but I'm not sure that every state does it that way.
Well, you might be right.
And I'm not sure I agree that the government should have conceded, but they did concede. So
right. So, well, you're...
But I guess if that is right, or if there's a difference for the guidelines, your argument has to be that if the ultimate judgment does not include anything that says, and you are sentenced to 15 minutes in jail or 2 days in jail or whatever, that's different from an ultimate judgment that includes a period of incarceration.
I'm not sure.
I mean, people have to do... Well, if you've been detained before the trial, we're always going to have this problem, right? Because
yes,
lots of people are detained before trial. And it looks like this Florida judge was just kind of recognizing reality there, and the way he solved the problem was to say, okay, well, you're going to have these 2 days of incarceration as part of your sentence, and then the rest of it's probation. And what you're saying is that at least in Wisconsin, there's some ways of sort of erasing the fact that there was incarceration before judgment by recharacterizing it somehow as something else, applying toward a fine, applying toward, reducing the period of probation or whatever, something else. And I guess what Judge Kaney's asking is that constitution, is that of constitutional significance? Is that of significance for the sentencing guidelines? The fact that, does everybody have to do it Wisconsin's way, in effect?
Well, I guess I would point it. No, I don't think everybody has to do it Wisconsin's way, but I think that that's an option. I'm merely pointing out.
And you're also saying if they don't do it Wisconsin's way, then these consequences for the voidness of the sentence, if it's uncounseled without a proper waiver, would follow.
Exactly. And actually, I think what was going on here is in Florida, they are trying to get around the requirement for counsel. That's why. Why else would a judge make this grand pronouncement, I'm not going to impose any jail? I'm not going to impose any jail. There's the reason, or there one reason for that is to negate the need for appointing counsel, and it saves the state money.
And then you think the judge just forgot? Because, there are certainly all these waivers there. That's what the government's really placing its argument on, that there, at the end of the day, was enough evidence that he was waiving his right to counsel that we can count as harmless error, whatever error there may have been on the other side.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely that the judge just forgot. I think what we have going on here is the judge is shifting these shells around. He's saying, I'm not going to impose jail. I am going to impose... And the defendant, all by himself, bewildered, walks out of there with probation. He never dreamed he could have got probation. Walks out of there with a 2-day jail sentence. Granted, he had already served it, but still. The two cases that you... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. What is the deficiency in the waiver of counsel here?
Well, a couple of deficiencies. Principally, it is the misinformation that the judge provided.
That he wasn't told about the maximum sentence, so that would seem to be pretty harmless if he got a 2-day sentence.
Well, no, but he was told that the maximum was 1 year, but then that was qualified when the judge said, promised him not to impose any jail, and if I do, before I do, I will give you the opportunity to withdraw your plea.
In busy state courts, that's not all that unusual, is it?
Well, yeah, misdemeanor court, busy, perhaps it's a populated county, they make mistakes. But But when you make mistakes, there are repercussions. And if you want to go loose and fast on misdemeanors, you know what? They do it loose and fast all the time. It just doesn't matter.
Maybe you should have to go to Florida and try to vacate your plea.
Well, we could go the Florida route or we could go the collateral attack route. I can just tell you as an aside, I did attempt to go back to Florida. I couldn't get anyone in Florida to talk to me, and we didn't have the money to hire an attorney.
Right.
So because I'll tell you what, as I pointed out in my brief, Florida law requires an advisal on the disadvantages of self-representation. So we have a darn good case in Florida. We just don't have any money. So we're stuck with a collateral attack.
But as a practical matter, taking a plea in cases like this and state courts all over, they'll skimp around a little bit if there's not going to be much of a penalty. Everybody knows that.
Sure. And I'm not here to say let's not skimp.
This is all in the wording, because if you'd give him straight probation, he'd still have served the 2 days.
You're right. But then he would not have been given a jail sentence. I mean,
then he wouldn't have had the jail sentence that could have counted for the guidelines enhancement.
Right.
Wouldn't have a right to counsel.
If it had been worded the other way.
And I'm not even here to say we need to reform the misdemeanor courts. They skimp too much. Maybe there are realistic, practical reasons why they skimp. You're right, they skimp. But when you get to federal court and you skimped on one of your priors, it doesn't count as a prior. It's just that simple.
Well, but that's, you could make that pitch to Judge Crabb, and she could have agreed with you and not.
Well, and she didn't.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here. But, you know, I think that she was just wrong on the question of whether it was a jail sentence. Read U.S. versus Glover. Read U.S. versus Staples. Two cases. The Glover case is a Supreme Court case from this circuit, and Staples is a Seventh Circuit case. You know, in Glover, the Supreme Court said any amount of jail has Sixth Amendment implications. So you can't just say, well, you didn't get enough jail to really matter. And in Staples, we have this situation. We have a situation of a time-served sentence. Now, it was 250 days, but still it was a time-served sentence. And this court said, that is a sentence. So that's what we have here. I would like to reserve my rebuttal time, so I'll sit down.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson? What is the government conceding in this case?
I'm sorry?
What is the government conceding in this case?
Well, I was, based on looking at this circuit's opinion in Staples, only conceding that the judge should have addressed the waiver argument. But nonetheless, the outcome is the same. If this court, the court did correctly assess the criminal history points for Mr. Feliciano, although the court may have been incorrect in not ruling, and it would have been especially Mr. Ruth laid out a detailed factual proffer to the court for what he would place in the record if he put his client on the stand, and the court could have ruled on that, but she determined or felt that it was unnecessary to do that because she didn't feel that a sentence of time served was a sentence of imprisonment under the definitions. And looking at Staples, it seemed to be, I'd be in a tough position to argue that in this circumstance, we shouldn't count a sentence of time served as a sentence of imprisonment, but in Staples, I'd be in an inconsistent, we'd be arguing inconsistently with the Staples case.
And more than that, I read her as saying, what's 2 days among friends? And it seemed to me that the point of Glover was that we shouldn't be in the business of deciding that a certain amount of time in prison was just too trivial to worry about.
Right. I think the Supreme Court's case...
That's Glover, yeah.
That was only 2 days, I think, in that case as well, anyway.
So they're not buying a de minimis argument?
No. So, but although the court might have been incorrect in failing to rule on that because she viewed it that way and thought he wasn't entitled to counsel, it nonetheless would be a harmless error on her part because, we end up in the same place in any event.
Why is it when the trial judge in Florida very clearly says to him, if I impose any jail time or you know, imprisonment, incarceration. I'll give you the chance to withdraw your plea, and then I'm perfectly willing to believe in the hustle and bustle of life. You know, he just forgets to do it. That's fine. You know, nobody's trying to do anything to the Florida conviction at this point vis-a-vis Florida, but it does have implications for what you can do with this old conviction under the guidelines. You know, I mean, it's if it's an uncounseled conviction, you can't use it.
Well,
and is his waiver valid when one of the prerequisites to the waiver, the assurance of no jail time with the various other consequences that go along with that, turns out not to be the case?
If you look at the wording, what the judge was saying, and he said it, if you look at the transcript, he says at the first, I'm not going to impose any sentence of imprisonment. And then at the end of the paragraph of where he's discussing, he says, you will not get any, you will not serve any jail time. Any additional jail time as a result of this. I think what the judge is referring to.
He also says, I'll give you the chance to withdraw your plea.
And
he doesn't.
Well, if the defendant did have an issue with the judge just imposed two days jail, but credit for time served, which meant he wasn't going to have to go to jail and serve any time, but it was going to be credited on his record. If his sentence of probation was ever revoked, the only way he would get credit for those 2 days time served, which is probably the interim between his arrest and his initial appearance, would be if it was on.
No, I understand that, but I'm just going to go back to the exact transcript. What the Florida judge says is, I will tell you right now that I will not be imposing any jail time in any of your cases unless I clearly tell you that that is going to happen and give you another opportunity to withdraw your plea knowing that you'll be receiving a jail sentence. So the judge makes that representation to him. Then it doesn't happen. So the question is the waiver of counsel under those circumstances a valid waiver?
And he did not literally impose any jail time
on
the defendant.
The sentence form says there are 2 days of jail. You can't say that under Staples, as you said, you can't say there's no jail time. There is jail time.
Clerically,
in other words, the
yes,
jail time is part of the sentence. It's not something else.
You're
that
not
overcharacterized.
He was assuring them they were not going to serve any additional.
Say the word additional. I won't be imposing any jail time. I mean, if people, you look at criminal records all the time, I'm sure, and criminal records that say the judgment of conviction includes jail time are treated differently from criminal records in which the judgment of conviction does not include jail time.
Yes, although in this instance, actually, it wouldn't make a difference for his guideline. He got 1 point for having a sentence of less than 30 days.
And then
if he'd gotten straight probation, he still would have gotten the 1 point, even if the judge had not imposed the 2 days. The 1 point still would have been there, so the outcome would have been no different with that, with those facts either.
Is the sentence, if we vacate this and send it back, could the sentence end up being the same, or at least
vacate for her to make a finding as to whether it was a legitimate waiver?
If we just sent it back in blank, could applying the sentencing guidelines, could it end up being the same sentence?
Under the record we have at this point, yes, it would be the same sentence. Even the only way it would not end up the same is if that Florida conviction were opened and not counted.
And then don't we have a question of whether the other 2 points for the committing the crime while on probation also go away? I thought in some sense there were 3 points at play, not just the one.
Right. You got 2 points for being on probation at the time. So really the imposition of the 2 days makes no difference to that. He was on probation either way.
I take it this is a point of contention between you and Mr. Ruth. I don't know, but that's my understanding.
That he's saying that the 2 points would not apply?
Right. I thought maybe he can tell me on rebuttal if that's what he's saying.
Okay. No.
Okay.
But I think the record and the proffer made by the defendant, by the Mr. Feliciano, was sufficient enough, very explicit enough, to cover that he did adequately and sufficiently waive pursuant to, if you look at Topar and then this court's opinion in Spates versus Frank, an adequate waiver of the right to counsel. So whether he was receiving a sentence of imprisonment or not, this court, what Mr. Ruth is arguing is that a defendant should be that the standard should ignore Tovar and use the Iowa-type inquiry, the Iowa Supreme Court inquiry, which the Supreme Court in Tovar said was absolutely unnecessary, to inquire whether they understand, whether they have enough education and understanding, some sort of informal legal experience and understanding of the ins and outs of the legal system and the possible alternative consequences or alternatives for their plea. And the Supreme Court said that's not necessary to satisfy the Sixth Amendment waiver of counsel, and which is why this court in Spates versus Frank said that requirement of voluntariness of the waiver doesn't require explanations and advice of the risks and benefits of each choice a defendant could make. So it was, and this court aptly noted then in that opinion that if that were the standard for requiring sufficiency of waivers, Miranda warnings, all Miranda warnings would be insufficient, and consents to search would be insufficient. So the record, our argument is the record here clearly shows an adequate and sufficient waiver under the standards of Tolar and Spates. This court should, even if the court had made a ruling, the district court, Judge Crabb, had made a ruling on the waiver, this court would be looking at waivers of counsel de novo anyway, because that's a question of law. And this court should de novo review that and find that there was a sufficient waiver under those cases I've cited, and should affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Harrison. Mr. Russo, how much time? 2.5 minutes.
Thank you. 3 points. The first is you talk about whether it will change the sentence. And I have to confess that until you brought it up, Judge Wood, that there may be a difference between the 1 point and the 2 points. We didn't brief this issue. I was operating under the assumption that if the conviction doesn't count for want of counsel, then the probate, you can't get zapped for the 1 point or the 2 points.
That's what I thought. That was your argument,
that
at
is.
Least that all 3 points went away. Now maybe that's right, maybe that's not right, but it I guess your theory has to be that an uncounseled conviction under Curtis, et cetera, is just void. It never happened, so all the rest of the consequences
exactly.
have to go too.
Exactly. And we didn't brief that. It was an assumption that I made, and you know, I hope I didn't jump to the wrong assumption, but I think that's the argument, that it just none of it counts. So we're talking about 3 points of criminal history. Those 3 points bumped him from criminal history category 1 to 2 to category 2 and took from him the safety valve. But for that, those extra 2 points, he would have been entitled to the safety valve, which is a 2-level downward adjustment on his offense level. So it does make a difference. Here's the thing. Across the board, when it comes to sentencing, there are so many places where there's this rule, there's that rule, and we split this hair and we split that hair, and we say, boy, you're just barely on the wrong side of that line. We say that to the defendant all the time. Well,
post-Booker, are we really saying that? I mean, the guidelines are advisory. If the judge thinks some fine-tuning needs to be done, the judge can go up a little or down a little?
Well, unfortunately, in the Western District of Wisconsin, I think we are. Because the fact of the matter is, the guidelines are still the guidelines, and that's what the sentence is that you get, is a guideline sentence, virtually across the board. Occasionally, at the very upper end, a 30-year sentence, you might get 5 years knocked off.
But if you sent this back, it might change.
You mean go up? Well, you know what? I have such confidence, for better or for worse, that we'll get a guideline sentence that I guess we're willing to take that risk. I have to concede also that Mr. Anderson is right. If you read Spates, Spates seems to give the impression that, look, if the guy says he knows he has a right to counsel and it's a voluntary plea, that's it. But read Tovar. You know, they talk about case-specific factors. Every case is different. You have to look at the specific factors. And even Spates talks about that. So I hope that you'll do that in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ruth. You took this as appointed counsel, I gathered, as well, right?
Yes.
Thank you for your representation of your counsel in this court, of your client in this court. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.